Chapter 25. Dangers in Healing. As his status rose, Yosef's trepidations faded about people's reactions to his innovations and the knowledge he purposefully or inadvertently introduced. Although he still tried to restrain what he said without thinking, accidental lapses happened occasionally, and those that did, he could either explain away or attribute to his idiosyncrasies. However, he couldn't ignore one issue. The consequences of the elements the Watchers had injected into him to help his body recover from the plane collision. Harley had explained that the elements, or nano-elements / nano-machines, as Yosef thought of them, also conferred immunity against infections and cancer. The elements somehow recognized any foreign organisms or abnormal cells and eliminated them. As much as he appreciated never again becoming sick or getting cancer, a third feature Harley had not enumerated was that Yosef healed from physical injuries faster than normal. Although all three effects of the nano-elements were positive, the first two would go unnoticed, but healing fast could attract unwanted attention. The benefits of fast healing were obvious, and so was the complication of explaining why he healed so fast, an explanation that dare not mention advanced technology, so that Yosef risked being labeled a demon and an agent of the Evil One, the Anyar version of Satan. After his transportation to Gedalium, Yosef became suspicious of how quickly his minor cuts and bruises healed. His first serious injury occurred when a musket ball slashed a shin bone during the courtyard fight defending against Baldorian raiders. Carnegie saw the wound, as did the medicant who applied stitches, but neither of them nor anyone else again examined the wound hidden by his pant leg. During the following hours and days, Yosef swore he could almost see the wound heal, it progressed so quickly. He recognized the danger. How could he explain or reveal injuries healing so fast that they inevitably invoked thoughts of divine or demonic intervention? During the next months and years, it would take additional healings and a collation of evidence for Yosef to understand the full implications of the nano-elements for himself and others. Abersford, after the Battle of Moreland City. Further conclusive evidence of Yosef's fast healing came after the Battle of Moreland City. As the battle drew to a close, an Arthani cannonball shattered the carriage of a captured 12-pounder only 8 feet from him. A chunk of wood scored a glancing but solid blow to the side of his head, nicking the bone and leaving a serious gash. Carnegie wrapped Yosef's head with a cloth to stanch most of the bleeding, and when they reached their original positions, a medicant closed the wound with 8 painful stitches. The throbbing pain and an intense headache slowly subsided during the 2 days it took them to return to Abersford. When Yosef got home and surreptitiously examined the wound site with mirrors, he would have estimated it was 10 days old or more. If he had lived alone or with a wife less perceptive or assertive, hiding the wound would have been manageable. Unfortunately, neither of the two conditions existed.
"Don't tell me it doesn't bother you," fumed Mara. "You winced when you turned your head fast and were unsteady on your feet yesterday when you returned. You'll let the medicants at St. Sidran's examine your hard head."
"Mara, it's not that bad. I was just tired from the trip."
"Oh, sorry, Yosef. Did I give the impression we were having a discussion on whether you were going? If I have to, I'll go get Carnegie and he'll carry you to the Abbey."
"Well, shit," Yosef cursed to himself. The big oaf just might do it if she starts in on him. I wouldn't blame either of them. Normally, you should keep an eye on any wound to the head. She didn't see it after it happened, and neither did the St. Sidran's medicants. So I should be able to bluff my way through.
The two of them stood staring at each other. Mara waiting for Yosef to give up, and Yosef imagining the medicant examination and the resulting comments on the condition of the wound. He focused back on Mara, standing, arms folded, looking back at him with her, "I'm Mara Kolsko-Keelan, and we'll do it my way" expression. "You're right, Mara. We'll go to St. Sidran's. When defeat is inevitable, you might as well pretend it's a good idea." Mara had been in mid-pregnancy, and they walked to St. Sidran's. Scheduled appointments were not available. Patients arrived and waited their turn. Yosef still felt uneasy about how he was now treated differently than an average citizen, especially since marrying the hetman's daughter. He finally capitulated and admitted to himself that he appreciated it at times, like this. As soon as they appeared in the hospital reception area, an aide rushed them to an examination room. Yosef tried not to look at the patients waiting their turn, but as he and Mara passed them, he couldn't help himself and checked out their expressions. All were neutral, respectful, or even seemed pleased to allow Yosef Kolsko and Mara Kolsko-Keelan to go first. The medicant aide had no sooner left them in the examination room than Saul Dillis rushed in. The middle-aged medicant was the chief surgeon at St. Sidran's and served temporarily as head medicant because Abbess Dira Bainham hadn't returned from Moreland City. Dira had sent word that it would be several more days before she came with wagons carrying the non-walking wounded Keelanders from the battle site.
"Mara! Yosef!" said Dillis, as he rushed in, breathing heavily.
"Nice to see you. Especially you, Yosef. I heard you returned last afternoon and with a bandage on your head. I assume that's what you hear about, though I've sent for Sister Norla to check Mara, as long as you're both here."
"Yosef first," said Mara. "I haven't seen his wound yet, but it needs to be checked. He acted like it bothered him, and now he's trying to insist it was fatigue from the travel."
"Very right to come in," Dillis agreed. "At least you'll need to learn how often to change the bandage. Sit over here, Yosef, next to the lanterns."
Yosef sat, and Dillis used flint strikers on four of the kerosene lanterns Yosef had introduced during the previous year. The lanterns were arranged in a vertical square, where a patient's chair or a cot could be moved to allow maximum light on whatever body part was under examination. When Yosef started to unwind the bandage, Dillis stopped him.
"Here, let me do that. We don't want the cloth to pull away scabs or break stitches. You did have stitches, didn't you?"
"Yes, Saul. 8, in fact."
8? It must be a significant wound for that many,"
Dillis said as he pulled the small pin holding the bandage end closed and slowly unwrapped the cloth.
"Tell me if you feel any pulling."
Mara stood looking over Dillis's shoulder, her frown and eye focus, reminding Yosef of his mother, making sure he behaved with the doctor when they visited for whatever reason. The medicant was nearly finished unwinding when Yosef felt a twinge. He had glimpsed the bandage reddened with dried blood.
"Something there, Saul. Not bad, but like a little pull of skin."
"Only a little left," said Dillis. "Let me dampen the cloth to lessen the chances of opening the wound."
The medicant moistened the last of the bandage with a wet rag, then carefully exposed the side of Yosef's head and frowned.
"Well, that doesn't look so bad," he said with a puzzled tone, gently probing the area with his fingers.
"It appears completely closed. In fact, from what I'm seeing, I question whether it needed the stitches at all. A simple compression bandage might have served, or maybe 2 stitches at most, but 8?
"So it wasn't that serious?" asked Mara.
"Not that I can see. Oh, there's redness around the cut and stitches, maybe more than I would expect. It'll leave a surprisingly big scar for such a minor wound.
but everyone's body is different, so it's nothing that unusual. Dilla stopped examining the wound and picked up the old bandage.
This is also puzzling.
From the amount of blood, I would have expected a more severe wound. Of course, head wounds bleed profusely. Even minor cuts can give an impression the injury is far more serious than it is.
The medicant dropped the bandage into a waste receptacle and turned to Yosef and Mara.
I could cover it again with a smaller bandage, but there's no sign of leakage, so I'd be inclined to leave it exposed to the air.
No way, Jose, Yosef thought. People seeing for themselves how fast it heals will raise red flags from here to Kernford, and Carnegie and Wyfor saw the original wound.
I'll be working in several of my shops in the next 6 days, so maybe it's better to keep it covered so nothing gets in it or hits it directly.
Yosef tried his best to sound sincere and resisted the impulse to check how Mara reacted.
As you wish, said Dillis. I'll cover it again and give you several similar bandages. Change them until you think the area is sufficiently healed not to need protecting while at your work. If it continues to bother you or anything changes, come back.
Yosef and Mara walked back home, holding hands. Past the Abbey's tended fields, Mara put her other hand on top of their clasped ones.
Sorry if I sounded so pushy, as you call it. It's just that I worry about you and wasn't sure if you'd take care of yourself. I know it's silly. You'd do what was necessary. Maybe I'm just overly worrying because of the baby.
Nonsense, said Yosef, smiling and patting her hand.
It's our responsibility to worry about each other. It's part of being married.
I warn you, said Mara.
I'll keep pestering you about how you feel, and I'll change the bandage for you.
Thanks, Mara, I appreciate it. In a pig's eye, he thought.
Now I have to find excuses to change it myself for the next several days. By then, I should be able to get away with claiming quick healing on a minor injury.
By the next morning, his headache was gone. Yosef peeked under the bandage to see further signs of healing and confirmed the need to keep Mara from too close an examination. He rose before his wife and changed the bandage, later showing her the lack of blood in the old bandage, confirming the injury to be minor and healing well. The second and third days he found other excuses she grumbled at, but seemed to accept. Finally, he let her take off the bandage, only when they prepared for bed.
Well, she groused, as she finished touching the wound area with her fingers.
The candlelight doesn't let me see that much, but it seems all right, and there's no warmth of the skin. I feel fine. No headache or tiredness. I think it's safe to say that's behind me. Just don't do too much yet, and another examination by Brother Dillis is a good idea.
Okay, tomorrow is too busy, but let's figure on the day after.
Fat chance. A few delays and it'll all fade away. Which was what happened. Safe from Mara and Dillis, Yosef had two more people to be wary of. Carnegie and Wyfor. Both men had been present at the time of the wound and saw the gash, the blood, and Yosef's unsteadiness. They were the most pertinent witnesses who could cause trouble. Fortunately, avoiding them proved easier than with Mara. Yosef canceled a scheduled monthly sparring session with Wyfor. By the time the next month rolled around, Wyfor would accept normal healing. Carnegie was more difficult. Yosef wore the bandages the first few days, then a cap hiding the wound site. By the end of the second 6 day, Yosef risked exposure with Carnegie, who evidenced no interest in the wound. Bronwyn and Aragorn. One consequence of Yosef's effort to hide his fast healing from Mara brought back to mind a separate concern. The Watchers had altered his biochemistry and physiology by modifying the genes of his mitochondria. The subcellular organelles responsible for energy production to compensate for Onyar's higher gravity. 1.18 times that of Earth. He had grudgingly admitted the Watchers were trying to help him, short of returning him to Earth. Although the vast bulk of human genetic material existed within the 30,000 genes in the cell nucleus, the mitochondria contained only 37 genes. Remnants of the genome of an ancient symbiotic microorganism that evolved into the mitochondria. A concern that occurred to Yosef the first time he'd held Aragorn, his and Bronwyn's child by their affair, was the effect of the higher gravity on a child with one parent from Earth. Yosef knew Aragorn would not inherit the enhanced energy production, because all of the mitochondria in a baby cells descended from the mother. A mother's ovum contained mitochondria, but the father's sperm did not. However long since humans had been transported to Onyar, he assumed that during the intervening thousands of years, there had been a natural selection for genes favorable to the higher Onyar gravity. How would having only half of his genes on Yarian affect Aragorn? Yosef already assumed Aragorn would be susceptible to diseases, because the child didn't possess the nano elements. Residual antibodies transferred from the mother initially bolstered a baby's immune system, though that protection faded and the child became self-dependent within months. The same reasoning that caused Yosef to worry about gravity also applied to disease resistance. Because half of Aragorn's genes came from Yosef, those genes might not be adapted to Onyarian microorganisms, and the child would be more susceptible than other Onyarian children. It would be bitter if Aragorn was doubly stressed by both Onyar's gravity and diseases. It had been 3 months since he'd last seen Aragorn. The child was now almost 6 months old, 7 Earth months, and should be crawling. Signs of impairment should be apparent. The questions had immediacy, because Mera would deliver another child in only a few months. He needed to visit the Merton farm to see for himself. At morning meal, Yosef broached the visit with Mera. Mera, I haven't seen Aragorn for several months. I'm considering a quick trip north to the farm to see how he's doing. Mera had been buttering a warm biscuit and continued with only a slight glance up to her husband.
That's a good idea, Yosef. I meant to suggest a visit to you, but with everything going on, Yosef relaxed. Even after 3 years, he hadn't fully adjusted to the Gedeli customs about such matters.
Here, adults were adults, and no stigma attached to a child conceived outside marriage, as long as the child was cared for. In Aragorn's case, the father had acknowledged responsibility in providing for the child. Yosef still shook his head at the memory of a God's Day service attended by himself and his pregnant wife, along with Bronwyn holding Aragorn, her husband, her sister-slash-co-wife, and the sister's 3 children. Everyone took all of it so matter-of-factly.
"Do you plan to spend the night?" asked Mera, taking a bite of biscuit.
"No, I thought of going right after we eat and being back this evening.
I think I'll stay here this time. I'm not looking forward to the carriage ride in my condition," said Mera. "I'll walk with you to Abersford and buy gifts for Bronwyn and the baby, do some visiting, and come back home."
An hour and a half later, Yosef bid Mera good day and mounted Seabiscuit. He tied a package to the back of Seabiscuit's saddle that held a bolt of cloth for Bronwyn and several shirts he assumed were too large for Aragorn now, but into which the child would grow. No word of his visit preceded him, so when he arrived at the farm, there was no welcome committee. From Seabiscuit's back, he could see Bronwyn and her husband, Seinwin, working in a field with 2 other men.
As he rode up to the house, Bronwyn's sister Delia came out of the house. A child of about 2 years of age hid behind her skirt, and she carried baby Aragorn. The two older children, 5 and 7, stopped playing with the dog and stood watching Yosef rein in and dismount.
"Greetings, Yosef,"
called out Delia, shifting Aragorn to her other hip. "It's been months since we saw you last, and we're relieved to hear you returned from the terrible fighting in Moorland," Delia said to the oldest child.
"Jinwan, run tell Mother Bronwyn and your father that Yosef Kolsko is here."
The 7-year-old ran to the field, followed by his sister and the yapping dog. Yosef walked up to Delia. She held out Aragorn, who clung first to Delia, then relented and held his arms open while Yosef picked him up. The child scrunched his eyes at his new conveyance, as if in doubt, then stuck a hand into Yosef's mouth and burbled.
"He's crawling since you last saw him,"
Delia commented.
"Set him down and watch. We have to keep an eye on him every second, or he's out the door."
Yosef squatted and put Aragorn on the ground. The child stared into Yosef's face, then twisted around and crawled back to Delia. Yosef's doubts about his child's health eased.
"Well, he's certainly healthy looking enough. Not that I've handled him or any other baby that much. I was afraid I'd see him as struggling. He might not have my modified mitochondrial genes, but those genes he has seem to be sufficient for Anyo's gravity,
at least when raised on it from conception."
"And he's strong and hasn't been sick?" asked Yosef.
"No," said Delia. "As healthy as any baby I've ever cared for. This whole last year has been a blessing. The other 3 children had minor ailments, but the rest of us have never felt better.
Darling little Aragorn brought good fortune to us all."
Something nudged the edge of Yosef's consciousness, but before he could identify it, Bronwyn and the others hustled in from the field, and for the next 2 hours, the 4 adults sat on the farmhouse porch. Aragorn alternating among 4 adult laps or playing, then being breastfed by Bronwyn and falling asleep. Yosef asked questions about Aragorn, inquired politely into the 3 parents and their other children, and was in turn queried about Moorland City and what it meant for the future of Gidelium. Halfway through the visit, Delia went inside and came back with plates of bread, cheese, hard sausage, and water. When Yosef left to return to Abersford, he held Aragorn one last time to reassure himself, then bid goodbye with an invitation for the Merton family to eat midday meal with him and Mera the next time the family attended a St. Sidran's God's Day service. His last glance back received a wave from Delia and another from Aragorn, his arm controlled by his second mother. The other children played again, and Bronwyn and Sinwin were absent, presumably back at work. The ride back was different from the time he'd returned home after Bronwyn told him of her plans to marry Delia and Sinwin and that she carried Yosef's child. Yosef had known the affair was slowly ending and felt ambivalent. Part of him was relieved at the ease at which he avoided any commitment to Bronwyn, and pleased that Bronwyn and the child were secure, yet at the same time he suffered from an aching loneliness. This time was different. He looked forward to going back to Mera and their child swelling within her. To their home. Mera, curiosity unquenched. When Yosef finally allowed Mera to examine his wound in full light, he strived to be nonchalant, and he assumed the view satisfied her. He was wrong.
"See, I told you it wasn't that bad," said Yosef,
the same as Brother Dillis noted.
Mera stroked the pinkish scar tissue, with hair growing back a lighter hue than before, not quite white. The original gash and 8 stitches were barely discernible.
The headaches are gone now? Asked Mara.
Yes, no twinges anymore.
Mara stood in their veranda, watching him walk toward Abbotsford. Her eyes narrowed at his obviously jaunty gait. He sounded a little too relieved, almost like he was afraid she'd notice something. He was right. Saul did seem to think it wasn't serious, but he was also perplexed at the amount of blood in the bandage with so minor a wound, even considering that head wounds bled more than others. And 8 stitches? Then why all of the excuses so that she didn't get to change the bandages? Yosef always did it himself, or didn't have time or something else. Carnigan, Poovy, and Y4 Kales had been at the scene of Yosef's injury when it happened, and were the first to go to him, with Carnigan tying a cloth around Yosef's head until they could get to the medicants. Carnigan had also been there for the stitches and saw how Yosef reacted to it all. On the men's return to Abbotsford, Mara quizzed Carnigan and found out that Yosef had underreported to his wife details of his role in the fighting. Mara considered Carnigan a friend, although what he thought on any subject was seldom clear. Yet she did know that when Carnigan and Yosef returned from Moreland City, it took little effort for her to get Carnigan to blab about Yosef's role in the fighting, details Yosef had conveniently glossed over. She now chastised herself that she hadn't probed for more details about the wound. She intended to rectify that oversight. When no opportunity occurred after 3 days, she insisted that Yosef needed a relaxing evening at a pub, with Carnigan, of course. She accompanied him, and although she ostensibly watched Go games, she kept a covert eye on Yosef's table. As soon as he left to relieve himself, she hustled over to Carnigan. She had only a few minutes.
"Having a good time, Carnigan?" she asked.
But before he could answer, she rushed on.
"Don't you think it's wonderful Yosef recovered so fast from his injury at Moreland City? I was worried, but it turned out to be a minor injury."
If there was more to the wound than Yosef led her or Medican Dillis to believe, she gave Carnigan the opportunity to contradict or confirm.
"Yeah," said Carnigan, taking another of his prodigious quaffs from a stein. "Bled like a river, and I feared the worst. I slapped a cloth on to hold him together until we got to the medicants, and they sewed him up. Kales and I pretty much carried him off the battlefield, and he was barely sensible the rest of the day. Then he seemed better by the next morning."
"Oh, I'm sure you've seen worse," Mara said, as innocently as she could manage.
"Well, unless you get to heads missing pieces, not really. Short of those cases, I thought he looked pretty bad. But what do I know?"
Mara spotted Yosef returning, and she patted Carnigan on the hand.
"Have a good rest of the evening."
She gave Yosef a peck as they passed. He back to his own stein, and she to her second, hoped-for informant, Y4 Kales. The wiry, scarred man sat with 2 other men as disreputable-looking as himself. Those 2 men excused themselves when the headman's daughter and wife of Yosef Kolsko arrived, while Kales simply eyed her as he would any unimpressive phenomenon.
"Hello, Y4. Actually, I don't think I ever asked if I could use your first name," Mara said as cheerily as she could, though she suspected he wasn't fooled.
"Why not, Mara?"
She stumbled for a moment, as accustomed as she had become to Yosef's lack of deference, based on family or position and the degree to which his attitude rubbed off onto those interacting with him the most. Kales's tone bespoke indifference. There was no reason to dissemble. She decided Kales would appreciate bluntness.
"Why, for you were there with Yosef when he got hurt at Moreland City. Can you tell me how it happened?"
Kales didn't hesitate.
happened as we withdrew. We'd done all the damage we could without trying to fight the Nathani face to face. Must have been one of the last cannonball shots. It hit a Nathani 12-pounder our men were pulling off. Yosef was only about 8 feet away, still giving directions to the men, as if they didn't already know to hurry. Anyway, the cannon's carriage shattered, and a piece several feet long and with blade ends took him in the head. I thought he was done for, but it just glanced along his skull.
His skull.
Mera's pulse shot up.
Kales continued.
Since he's here in the snarling Greco, I assume he's recovered. Although it wouldn't have surprised me if it had taken several months.
Oh, he recovered quite quickly,
Mera said distractedly, as she digested Kales' account.
Well, thank you, Y4. I won't bother you anymore, and I think my turn at Go is coming up.
Later that evening, Yosef went straight to bed with a beer-fuzzed brain. Mera sat on the veranda thinking.
I know I promised him I wouldn't pry. He's already told me there are things he can't explain to me. And I believe him when he says if there's anyone he can someday tell, it will be me. Still, it's almost certain his wound healed so fast that he was afraid it would be noticed and raise suspicions about who or what he is. Dira also warned me not to press too hard and have him shut down in other ways. None of that means I can't stay curious and try to figure it out on my own.
She decided she would write down everything out of place she'd noticed previously, even if at the time it didn't rise to her consciousness. She'd add everything Yosef had ever said about himself and his homeland. What he hadn't told her, she could glean from others, such as Dira and Sistian.
Then I'll be alert for anything else that happens. I wonder if someday I end up writing a book on the life and times of Yosef Kolsko.
With a chuckle, she rose and entered the house, nestled next to her husband, and soon fell asleep. It was years before she remembered that foresight could come when least expected, even in the guise of humor. Revelation to Mera. As time passed, Yosef's worry about people finding out that he healed too fast faded under the press of responsibilities, not the least of which was Aeneas' birth. One evening after work, months after the events following the Battle of Moreland City, Yosef was rocking Aeneas when a cry came from the kitchen.
Ah!
It was Mera's voice. He jumped to his feet, held the baby tight, and ran toward the kitchen. He heard women's voices, alarm from Anarind, directions from Gwened, and curses and cries of pain from Mera. He burst through the door from the hall to see Mera clamping a hand over her forearm, dripping blood on the floor.
"Let me see it," demanded Gwened, trying to pry Mera's hand away.
Anarind held towels, waiting for something to do with them.
"What happened?" exclaimed Yosef.
All that came from Mera was, "Damn, damn, damn."
"Knife slipped," Gwened said, as calmly as if commenting on a casual observation.
"Knife?" was all Yosef got out.
"We were slicing the Harlan gourds into halves."
For the first time, Yosef noticed several oval-shaped vegetables on the table, three cut lengthwise in half. Blood had smeared on the table near one of the three chairs.
"Here, Anarind, hold Aeneas," said Yosef, handing her the baby, who by now had picked up the tenor of the adults and wailed, adding to the clamor.
Mera appeared pale, her mouth set and her eyes smoldering. He felt relieved. He was sure it hurt like hell, though he thought she was mainly angry at herself.
"Let me see," he said,
gently guiding her to the kitchen washing basin and awaiting ewer of well water. He held her arm over the basin, and when she took away her hand, holding the wound, blood oozed up, lots of blood. She winced and sucked in air as Gwynedd rinsed the forearm with water. I need to get running water into the house, rose unbidden in Yosef's mind. He'd noticed such seemingly inappropriate thoughts coming to him in stressful moments. The water washed away the blood on the forearm as fresh blood continually welled out of a 2-inch straight gash running midway between elbow and wrist. Good grief, Mara. How did you do this while cutting a gourd? It was the wrong thing to say.
Obviously, it was the easiest way to cut myself, you idiot.
Mara shot back, then drew in a deep breath.
I'm sorry, it was just so stupid. I was having a hard time cutting through a tough section of skin, probably where the gourd wasn't quite ripe, and I held the damn thing in the crook of my arm. It slipped, and next thing I knew... Gonna need stitches, said Gwynedd, in an unperturbed voice.
Well, no shit, Tonto, Yosef said in English. No one noticed. Yosef held the gash closed with his fingers. The blood flow slowed to a stop. No pulsing, he observed, so no arteries cut. I think it's into the muscle, but no tendons either. Should heal okay. Gwynedd's right. It should probably get... The line of thought trailed off as another took its place. Yosef had heard of flashes of insight in science, moments when a set of facts, observations, and questions came together. He had a flash of insight. His own fast healing, Aragorn, having never been sick. Bronwyn, Delia, and Synwen not getting sick since Bronwyn joined the marriage, although Delia's and Synwen's 3 children had minor illnesses. Mara not having cold since their marriage. Mara suffering minimal morning sickness. Mara surprising other women by how fast she recovered from childbirth. Holy crap, he thought. I passed the nano elements to her. Sex? That's the connection. There must be nano elements in my semen, and I passed them to Mara. Had Harley said the elements were meant only for Yosef's physiology? Or did he just assume it? He couldn't remember. If he passed them on and they functioned in another body, then somehow they adjusted to new bodies. How the hell did they do that? That shouldn't be possible. He took several breaths and a few seconds to calm himself. Think. Just because I don't know how it's done doesn't mean the Watchers can't do it. Hell, they can fly spaceships around and design the nano elements in the first place, so who knows what they're capable of? Mere seconds had passed since his insight. He still held Mara's arm. She still cursed, and the other women still stood anxiously. If he took her to the medicants for stitches, they would check her arm to see how the healing was going. For that matter, after any bleeding stopped, the wound would be left open to the air. Everyone would see it. No, said Yosef. I don't think it needs stitches. We just need to wrap it closed, and it'll be fine.
What? Exclaimed Gwynedd,
her usual equanimity shaken by Yosef's idiotic statement.
That needs stitches. I've seen cuts like this, and sewing it closed will be safer from corruption and let it heal faster.
Yosef wanted to blurt,
I don't think infection or slow healing is going to be a problem.
Instead, he said, Trust me, I'm sure it'll be okay. It's not as bad as it looks. And by tomorrow, it'll be better. If not, we can always go to the medicants then.
I don't care if you're Yosef Kolsko or not. This needs stitches,
asserted Gwynedd.
I don't know, Yosef, Mara said. It does look bad. Maybe Gwynedd is right.
Yosef hesitated, then did what he hated to do.
I know what I'm talking about, Mara. It comes to me that we should wrap it and wait until tomorrow.
The "it comes to me" phrase had become Yosef's go-to words when he didn't want to explain something. The phrase also fed rumors that he was being told something by unseen powers. He had never used the stratagem with Mara or anyone close to him, and regretted he couldn't think quickly enough of another ploy to hide Mara's wound and the anticipated quick healing. Yosef squeezed the sides of the wound shut again. Gwen had kept pouring water on it, which still mixed with blood seeping from the cut. Mara looked at the wound, at her husband, back at the wound, and was about to say something when he narrowed his eyes, looked hard at her, and imperceptibly shook his head. She focused hard back.
Okay,
Mara said, her voice shaky.
Go ahead and bind it up.
Oh, complained Gwynedd. You're both wrong. If it's not better in the morning, we're going to get the medicines if I have to go get Breda Keelan. Let's see if you can ignore her like you do me.
Are you sure, Mara?
Asked Onorind, rocking the now quiescent Aeneas.
It does look bad. Don't worry, Anna. Yosef knows what he's doing.
Although Yosef wasn't sure Mara's voice conveyed complete conviction, he tightly wrapped the forearm with clean cloth strips the outraged Gwynedd had procured, tight enough that Mara complained.
I know it's tight, dear. That's what's best.
Later, when Mara and Yosef retired to the room, she had questions, as he knew she would. She sat on the bed, cradling her injured arm in her lap, not saying anything, looking at him.
What is it, Yosef? Why didn't you want me to go to the medicants? And why tell Gwynedd and Onorind it wasn't serious? I've seen injuries like this.
For the last 2 hours, he had interacted with the others only outwardly. Within, his mind turned over what to say and how much to say. He knew it was a time he couldn't get away with saying nothing.
You couldn't go to the medicants right away because they might see the wound again in a few days, he said softly yet firmly. Either of your parents, maybe both, would insist on it. If that happened, the medicants would not understand why the wound healed so fast.
Mara's response was also soft, almost reluctant, as if unsure she wanted the answer.
How do you know this, Yosef? And this is one time you're claiming you just know is not going to work. I'm afraid part of the answer is exactly that. That I do know what will happen. But I can't tell you exactly why.
You can't tell me or won't?
I heal faster than most people. So fast that many might wonder things we don't want them to. I don't know exactly why I heal fast. I only know it's true.
He wasn't lying too much. He really didn't know exactly how the Watcher's elements worked.
While I can't be sure, he said, I believe the same will be true for you. If others notice this, there'll be questions we don't need people asking or thinking about. Yosef, if anyone but you told me this, I'd judge them delusional, insane, or lying for some unknown reason. What am I to think of this? If what you say is true, this is like God intervening in the world. Something the word tells us he doesn't do, except on rare occasions, leaving most of life to our free will. Is this an act of God? Are you really a Septarsh or something else?
I'm a man who has no knowledge of God, except what I wonder about or what others say and teach. I can't say if I even believe in God, though I believe in much of what the Word teaches. I suspect this healing is connected to my coming to Gedalium. A devout person might believe it's a gift from God, maybe a kind of compensation for my being cast here, never to see my homeland and family again. I just don't know, Mara. What I now believe is that somehow I've passed this healing ability on to you, probably through our intimate contact. But however it happened, Mara, isn't it a gift? How can it be evil?
Mara's face expressed troubling emotions. Good or evil, understood or not, this is hard to take in.
She rose and walked to a window, not seeing anything in the darkness but using the time and the act to gather her thoughts. She spun back, facing Yosef, concern on her face.
Aeneas, what does this mean for him?
I believe it'll be the same with him. He's only a few months old, so it's too early to know. He still has immunities from you that haven't worn off yet.
Damnation, Yosef, this is not the time I want to hear your riddles.
Oh, shit. Watch out for blabbering without thinking. Immunities is a word they don't know, and I'm not about to go off explaining about immune reactions or how newborns are protected with antibodies from their mother's blood before their own immune systems are up and running. Sorry, Mara, I only meant we won't be sure about Aeneas for perhaps years. Let's assume that what I passed to you, you in turn passed to him. Isn't that a good thing? Our son will heal from injuries faster than otherwise. Would you take it away from him if you could? From yourself?
Mara sat on the edge of their bed and looked down at her wrapped arm, blood showing through the cloth.
If I took off this cloth, would the cut be gone?
No, I doubt it's had time to close. The bleeding might be much less. The healing will still happen, and you'll have a scar.
Yosef unconsciously touched his own headscar.
Mara noticed. Your wound at Moreland City. It was far more serious than you let me believe, wasn't it?
I think so. Of course, I'm not a doctor, a medicant.
I felt worried and annoyed when I never saw the wound, said Mara. Except when we visited St. Sidran's Hospital and the medicant said it looked minor. You were worried, weren't you, that he would be suspicious?
As I was, after Carnegie and Kales both told me what the wound looked like after it happened.
Think of it, Mara. Both of us have so much to do. The Narthani, the innovations I still might introduce, the university. What would happen if people saw us as different?
While some might think of us as protected by God, others might see us as demons or agents of the evil one. It's a risk, or at least a complication, we don't need. Things might change in the future.
Can we just accept it as a gift from God and move on with our lives?
I'd like to think of it that way, said Mara. Part of me doesn't see how this can be anything but a blessing. But another part of me still needs to think about it.
Mara went back to the window. Yosef waited, sitting on the bed's edge. He saw her stiffen and she faced him again.
Is it just healing, Yosef? I've told you how my headaches and fevers have gone away since we married. It wasn't just good fortune or changing my moods, was it? It's not just the healing that's changed.
He had wondered how long Mara would take to make the connection. Her being Mara, he wasn't surprised it had taken only minutes.
Again, I can't be sure, but since I don't get sick and you haven't since we've been married, I think it's a possibility you won't get sick.
Ever?
Never, said Yosef. If that's true, then neither will you get the tumor sickness you said one of your aunts died of. My people call it cancer.
Anything else you want to hit me with, Yosef?
Maris said with barely hidden sarcasm.
Will I be able to fly or live forever?
I wouldn't plan on getting rid of the carriages just yet, replied Yosef. Then he waited for her to follow up on the second part of her question. She didn't, to his relief, because he didn't want to add the possibility of extended lifespans, something that he couldn't predict and wouldn't have clues about for many years, and that would present an even greater complication if it happened. Mara walked from the window to the bed and sat on Yosef's lap, putting one arm around his shoulders and looking him straight in the face.
It's going to take me time to absorb all this and understand what I'm feeling. At the moment, it's a combination of fear of what I don't understand, worry about how other people would respond if they learned of this, wondering whether somehow all this goes against God's will, a residue of wondering if you really are insane, and awe at what it all means.
The next morning, as soon as they both were awake, they went to a bedroom window. The sun peeked over the eastern hills, and its rays shone through the glass. Mara unwrapped the bandage. Blood had seeped through, though no more than had been there the previous night. When the last of the cloth lifted away, they could see the cut. A thin line already closed, no blood seeping out. Mara probed the surrounding reddish tissue gently with a finger.
It's a little warm and only a little sensitive. Most of the pain is gone, with barely a mild ache to the arm. She looked at Yosef with a sense of wonder. I'm beginning to believe everything you told me last night. It's like a tale with magic you tell children, except it's real. And you're right. We need to keep it between us until a time comes when we can reveal it, if that ever happens.
Yosef sighed with relief.
As rational and bright as he knew his wife to be, he'd had doubts how she would receive what he'd told her.
However, there was still one problem.
Within our household, it will be difficult, but I think we can manage it, although at some point it will likely become evident to those closest to us that there is something unusual about the Kolskos. There's another worry. If it's true that I passed on to you the ability to heal quickly when we coupled, then I...
Bronwyn,
blurted Mara. Yosef nodded, his face grim.
And her sister, their husband, and...
Aragorn! Exclaimed Mara.
Yosef nodded. At least they're on a farm and don't interact daily with other people, but it is a farm and accidents happen. Not getting ill should attract no attention, but it's only a matter of time before there's an injury requiring medicants.
What about bringing them into our confidence?
Alert them what to expect and to be circumspect? Mara suggested.
Tell them what?
Asked Yosef.
I don't know them well enough to predict how they'd react.
What if they go straight to the theophists or medicants?
Mara shook her head.
We'll have to hope no attention comes to them about this. If it does, we'll handle it when it happens.
It wasn't a solution that satisfied either of them. Yosef didn't mention Buna, the woman of his other brief affair and the owner of a seamstress shop. Buna was past childbearing age, and he hoped he remembered that women she employed did most of the work. It was a reasonable risk that Buna would not be injured severely enough for her fast healing to draw attention. Yosef felt satisfied with Mara's reaction to the revelations, which temporarily relieved one concern and let him return all of his attention to the Narthani and how the clans could prepare for whatever came next.